to the latest episode of the Citation Podcast. Really, really excited today to be joined by two special guests. We've got James Kent and Nathan Littler. So welcome both. We'll let James and Nathan give a full introduction, but put simply, James and Nathan are experts in all things tendering and all things bid writing. So we're going to be picking the brains today on the biggest mistakes that James and Nathan see in their tendering experience, the advice they'd give to businesses, and practical advice in terms of how to increase the success rate, and the key takeaways, and looking to the future, you know, what they're expecting to see more of in tendering. So anyone that's listening that wants to do more commercial work, whether you're brand new to tendering or you've had some success and you want to now take that next step, you know, we hope that there's something, you know, useful for yourself in today's episode. As always, if you've got any questions or comments, you know, please do get in contact via the comments and via the contact details in the description, and ourselves or James and Nathan would be more than happy to get back in contact with yourselves. So without further ado, I'll hand you over to James and Nathan. So yeah, it'd be great to hear an introduction from yourselves in terms of, you know, who your tender team are, and for those that are not familiar, and also, I guess, you know, how you came to partner with Citation.
Hello, I'm Nathan. I oversee bid strategy, direction, and tender production at your tender team. I work closely with our clients to put together winning proposals, and also with our bid managers to make sure that we're delivering on all of the buyers' or commissioners' requirements. I've been involved in tendering for over 10 years and set up your tender team in 2017 with James. And we've just really grown from strength to strength. As James said, I think we partnered with you guys about 5 years ago, and the relationship has been beneficial on both sides. You know, we come together because of matters of compliance, because of needing accreditations and certifications, as well as obviously HR and employment law advice, especially when it comes to things like policies and procedures, and supporting clients through 2P transfer processes as a result of winning contracts. And as James said, we've partnered with UCheck within the group because they wanted a fresh take on their approach to tenders. They were experiencing some losses and they wanted to sort of speak to us to say, how can we approach this afresh? So rather than just use a review and evaluation service, which is when we work with clients to guide and support them on the production of their own tender response, we just said, we'll take the whole thing off your hands, and we'll use our full management service to manage the end-to-end process of the completion of the tender, and we won it for them. We won it a fair few tenders for them since. I'm Nathan, so I oversee the tender production. So I work directly with clients once they've engaged us, offer obviously consultancy advice and guidance on how to frame identify the bid themes, and to put their proposals together.
Yeah, so we are from your tender team, been a Citation partner for more or less 5 years. We are the most decorated bid writing company in the UK, won many awards, Lloyds Bank Business Excellence Awards, Chamber of Commerce Awards, and essentially we take the hassle and pain out of tender writing for clients. We've got a 93% win rate for tenders that we write, and we work across all sectors. And essentially we write tenders on behalf of ambitious companies wanting to grow their business through tender wins. We work with clients that stretch from a couple of hundred thousand pounds turnover right up to, you know, £4 or 5 billion, from a small company based in a particular area of the UK right through to international businesses. So anyone who is wishing to take part in a tender, who stacks up, you know, who meets the eligibility requirements for the tender, we can support, really. And in terms of any sort of sectors, is you know, really the world's your oyster in terms of sectors. We work from the health and social care sector mainly, right through to the construction tenders, printing, grounds maintenance tenders, you name it. Anything that's tendered in the public sector mainly, we can support with. In terms of us, the sweet spot, it's got to be for clients to use a service like ourselves. Normally, it's a contract value of about £300,000 upwards. But essentially, we can help anyone from a full tender right through to a review and evaluation. So we actually offer a service if companies write a bid themselves, we can sense check it for them, provide some feedback and guidance before they submit the tender. So, you know, it's a flexible approach, and it's a, you know, it's a tailored approach based on what they want. There's variances across the different sectors, and there's some similarities. Obviously, depending on what you're doing, whether you're doing the health and social care sector, there's a caring element into there. There's different accreditations that are required. But there's similar themes across every tender within the section questionnaire. The quality questions will be bespoke to that particular contract and that framework.
Yeah, I think that's where our expertise really comes to the fore, because we know tenders inside out, so it doesn't really matter whether it's a tender for the supply of hay or the storage of cadavers or the provision of health and social care or construction. It really doesn't matter, because our expertise is in tendering and identifying what makes our clients stand out from the competition, and that's what we want to really try and sell within the tender itself. And then of course you've got compliance going in there at the front end. So your question about what size of organization do we work with, it can be anybody as long as they're compliant and they stand a chance of being successful. And that's what we really want to try and do, because we want to try and grow our business as well as our clients' business through winning public sector contracts.
And touching on your point about turnover, we've taken some of our clients through tender wins from turning over 200,000-300,000 over the last sort of 5 years, and now turn over 1-3 million purely on the tenders that they've won. Yet again, we had a client that come to us in the health and social care sector, turning over 3 million. They're now at 15 million over the last 6 years with multiple tender wins. So it can springboard your business from a certain turnover and you know, help complete your goals that you've got for your business.
Well, thank you. So, I mean, so you've touched already on compliance and mentioned the role that compliance plays in tendering. So obviously you guys live and breathe tenders, you see a lot of tenders. So yeah, what role is, you know, compliance, health and safety, employment law, you know, these kind of areas, you know, how important are they in tenders?
So compliance for us isn't just a checkbox exercise. We want to make sure that all the client meets the requirements, but we also want to make sure that they're compliant with, as you say, HR, people management, the financial requirements of each and every tender. But then for us, it goes much deeper than that, because we need to make sure that the specification criteria has been hit, each point has been covered by the client, and also by ourselves in answering every single question. So whether that's reference to any accreditations or memberships or registrations that a client has, any particular reference to any strategies, guidelines or principles that need to be included, and then of course making sure at the very end of the process that we have completed all the documents properly, you know, we've dotted the I's and crossed the T's and made sure that the client is happy.
And what kind of documents would they typically ask for? Like, is it like a health and safety policy? Is it contracts, employment, like what kind of documents do businesses need?
So you always have your financials, making sure that they've got the right turnover, that the size of the business is good enough to meet the contract deliverables. But then yeah, you'll have the health and safety, equality and diversity, modern slavery, depending on the size of the organisation as well. And then they always ask for evidence of the certifications or accreditations that the company has, as well as the policies, like you say.
And in terms of accreditations and, you know, SSIP, etc., is there ever any particular a higher weighting for certain types of ISOs or SSIP, or, you know, what sort of accreditations are typically asked for in tenders?
Yeah, so ISO-wise, they tend to sort of beat all others when it comes to accreditations. Like they're far superior to the SSIP certifications, like you said. So we're looking at things like 9001 for quality, 14001 for environmental, 45001 for health and safety or occupational health and safety. And then sometimes we've come across tenders as well where they ask for 22301, so the business continuity management. So that's where you guys step in, and that's where we always issue a referral to yourselves to say we're working with a client at the moment. Can you guys help with the process to make sure that the client is successful?
And has anything changed particularly since COVID in terms of tendering, in terms of what's been asked for from a tendering point of view? Obviously there's a lot of emphasis on infection control and areas like that. Like, have you guys seen anything in terms of post-COVID and how that's affected the tendering landscape?
I think at the height of the pandemic, for sure, there was lots of questions about infection prevention and control. Also PPE supply chains. Of course, there was a lot of issues with that, with the sort of Moan case and things like that in terms of the procurement of PPE. But post COVID, we're now still looking at SSIP accreditations, particularly in the health and social care sector, because even though there's the regulatory body, the Care Quality Commission or Care Inspectorate up in Scotland, they still want to know that you've got good health health and safety practices in place. And if the CQC are only coming around once every 2, 3, or 4 years, there's nothing in the interim to say, yes, you're operating to the highest standards of health and safety. So that's where your SSIPs come in, because I know you guys do your health and safety certification for care sector clients. So that's been really beneficial for a number of our clients in that sector.
Really interesting. Obviously, you know, you guys will see, you know, so many different types of tenders, but with, you know, diverse range of clients. I'm sure many of your clients don't kind of typically make mistakes, because you'll help them succeed. But, you know, from your initial conversations with clients and your kind of sector knowledge, you know, what are the biggest mistakes that businesses would typically make when it comes to tendering?
Yeah, coming back to the compliant bid side of things that Nathan touched on, I think it's understanding what you need to be compliant with at the front end of the process, and understanding that there's various pass-fail criteria that they need to meet in order for their tender just to be considered, let alone evaluated. So for us, it's working with clients and making sure that they're understanding that you need a certain accreditation to bid, a certain amount of turnover, credit score. In some cases, particularly in health and social care office or depot locations, and they need to understand these inside out before coming to a bid or no bid decision. But from my point of view, I look after the client side of things. Nathan looks after the bid side of things, but the biggest mistake is potentially companies trying to run before they can walk in terms of what they're going after. So being realistic and understanding if your turnover is a certain level, say 300,000, and you wanted to bid for a winner-take-all tender that's a couple of million over 3 years, realistically, that's not going to work, because you're not big enough to take that win on board, to mobilise it, to add the additional resource that's required. So running before you can walk is a big element of it. And that's a mistake that you can easily rectify by talking to the likes of ourselves and actually bidding for realistic contracts that you do stand a better chance of winning, whether that be at your turnover or your experience level or your accreditation level. And a lot of companies that we've spoken to at the front end of us working with them, they don't understand the requirements fully before deciding to bid. So it's important that you take that time, and we can help them with that, is take that time, step back, have a look at the requirements before you bid, rather than start entering the tender process. It's typically a 4-week period, and it's, you know, it's a very involved process. Understand those requirements, go through it with a fine tooth comb before you commit to the tender, and that's where working with ourselves, we can help them understand that and say, look, okay, fair enough, you know, you stack up on paper that, you know, you've got all the accreditations, you can meet the requirements, you meet the specification, let's go for it. Or having an honest and frank conversation to say, look, sit this one out. How the tender is written, they're looking for a big provider, a national provider potentially. This one might not be the one for you. There's others coming down the pipeline that we might be better suited for. So yeah, running before the can walk is a major factor in companies falling over when it comes to tendering, especially when they're new to tendering. And just being honest with themselves, can they deliver the requirements? If there's every tender will stipulate the timeline, when the tender will actually go live, when the tender is going to be evaluated, and the contract start date. If you win that tender, can you deliver everything on that specification? And just having an honest conversation with yourself. There might be 2P involved, which I know you guys can come in from a HR point of view. Are you confident and capable enough to onboard 10, 20, 30 staff into your business to facilitate this contract? And just speaking to the experts, you know, we're the experts in the tendering side of things, speaking to HR experts about what are the implications if I win this, and, you know, tooping these staff over. So there's a lot of considerations to be done when a tender comes out, which means that people have got to dedicate enough time to work with ourselves to go through the documents to make sure that they can fulfill the requirements, really. In terms of a bid wise, and Nathan will touch on it in a minute, people don't devote enough time to responding to a tender. They're running, in most cases, it's the business owner, or they've got a day job. They're running the tender management alongside their day job, and there's just not enough time to do it, because, as I said, normally you get four week window. They regurgitate old tender responses, which just doesn't work at all. It's not written to the specification. It's not written to that particular contract and that tender. And it just shows their lack of experience tendering. And also, it doesn't look great if you are actually awarded that contract. You know, you've got to put forward the best possible bid, which is where ourselves and Nathan come into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to tendering mistakes, non-compliance obviously the biggest issue, but we try and tackle some of those at the front end by making sure that the client is eligible to bid for the contract. There are instances where things sort of slip through, because if we've made a client aware of certain criteria and then they've ignored us, or they've not followed through on the requirements, such as mandatory site visits, which we know we've had clients had their whole tender submission disqualified because they didn't attend the site visit. So that's really important. Read everything, understand the requirements, including those at the front end and not just those related to the tender. Approach each tender as a unique opportunity. It's not a copy and paste exercise. Again, some clients where we've worked with them in the past and they have been unsuccessful because they've copied and pasted, they've not developed a unique proposal for each and every bid. The bid in and of itself should meet the commissioner's specific requirements, the buyer's specific requirements, and it should be persuasive and it should be convincing. So we always need to make sure that we've got evidence in the submission. So whether that's case studies, testimonials, certifications, using all of that as evidence to include with the bid, to try and convince the buyer that, you know, you as the client can deliver on what they expect.
Thank you. Obviously a lot to consider for businesses, but I suppose you touched upon the start, you know, although there's a lot of investment and time, obviously it's a high reward as well, in terms of, you know, obviously the clients that you've seen and the revenue growth that we've seen. So, you know, if you've got clients that, you know, potentially are thinking about tendering, but, you know, looking at it and thinking, you know, I'm not sure if I can, you know, can I afford to take the risk, or, you know, what would you say to those clients that are perhaps on the fence and are thinking about moving from domestic to commercial, but are not quite sure about, you know, if it's right for them or timing wise?
Yeah, it's about being realistic. As I said, you know, choosing the right opportunity for yourself, you know, where that stacks up with contract value versus what you're turning over, and picking your battles in terms of, look for a framework that's in your area that you can deliver on, and you have got the requirements, you know, you can fulfill that specification. Win, pick up some easier wins from a DPS point of view, which is a dynamic purchasing system. It essentially acts as a foot in the door. So you be appointed to a DPS, you then start winning some work. And if you're brand new to tendering, that's a good opportunity to start winning some work. You can then use that as a reference moving forward, then move up to a framework. So it's not a winner take all when you're up against some larger companies. Assign yourself to a framework, your business naturally grows over a couple of years. There might be a couple of framework wins, and then you can stand on your own two feet and start going for the winner take all opportunities. And that's, you know, that's the dream, really, is to start with DPS, framework, then winner take all. Before you know it, your turnover is increasing and increasing. As I said, we've taken companies from a couple of £100,000 turnover right through to, you know, £1.5-2 million turnover purely based on tender wins. So your experience then starts talking for itself, and you lead with that experience in your next tender. Before you know it, starts having that snowball effect. And so long as everything's running well in the back end and you're delivering that contract successfully, and you've invested in the likes of your accreditations, and there's no nasty surprises about tenders coming out that need certain accreditations that you've not got. And it's about reinvesting into your business and growing it organically, rather than taking the jump and going straight for a big tender and it being knocked back and unsuccessful purely because you've not got the ability or the resources or the experience to deliver it.
We don't ever want clients to fail. We'll never set a client up to fail, and that's why we always work hard at the front end. We have those tough conversations. Sometimes clients don't necessarily want to hear that they can't bid for this opportunity because they're not suitable, but that isn't to say that we don't believe in them. We're just trying to give them the best chance of success, because if we lost tenders on behalf of our clients, then they wouldn't be coming back to us. And some of our clients, we've worked with 30, 40 or 50 tenders over the last few years, and they know and they trust us. And if we say to them, give this one a miss for, you know, price, politics or other reasons, they believe in us and they trust us, and we'll wait for the next tender to come along.
Brilliant, thank you. And in terms of looking to the future, you know, what do you think will become more important when it comes to tenders? Obviously, there's, you know, more, you know, different threats, you know, and different opportunities in the most of cyber security is a hot topic, you know, lots of different areas. So what are you guys seeing at the moment is being asked for more in tenders, and what would you predict is going to be asked for and be more important from a waiting point of view in future?
For me, from a client side, it's definitely increased competition. So you only have to look at tender award notices to see the amount of applications and tenders that commissions are now receiving. So there's definitely an increased competition versus 3, 4, 5 years ago. So, you know, even more so, you've got to get that bid right. You have one opportunity, that tender, once it's in and the contract starts, typically we run for 3 to 5 years. So if that's a tender you've set your heart on and you're unsuccessful, you won't get another look in until, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the line. So increased competition is definitely a you know, an emerging factor, more so than any other years that we're aware of. You know, you've got to differentiate your bid versus other bidders. You might be in a position where you are turning over a healthy amount and you're bidding against companies that have a bid team and they've got 3, 4, 5 tender writers internally that are experts in their field. And, you know, more important, you know, you can compete with these companies by using a service like ourselves. We are your external bid team for the 4 weeks that you need us every year. And it's, you know, using a service like ours will differentiate your bid and will put a professional touch to your bid versus you writing it in-house in between your day job, passing it around to different staff to use it. So differentiating your bid has got to be one of the main factors, and it's one of the most important factors of the time at the moment. Yet again, accreditations, we're seeing that typically when you're working with the MOD, you've got to have cyber essentials, like no matter what. So normally that was in IT tenders, website tenders, all that type of stuff, but the cyber essentials is now creeping into other areas and other sectors. So we're seeing definitely more ISOs are being asked for as mandatory pass-fail, and that can be from a healthcare, it can be from a construction point of view. So ISOs and definitely cyber essentials, they're on the rise of what these is being asked for in the tender, in the tender process. And I'm sure Nathan will touch on it, continued focus on social value and environmental considerations. That's another big important factor that nobody thinks about. If they're new to brand new to tendering, it probably wouldn't have crossed their mind about what they've got to deliver from a social value point of view, or, you know, how they're going to preserve the environment, look after, how you're going to change your day-to-day business to become more environmentally considerate. And, you know, the differences that you can make in the local area, if you win a tender, it's an expectation that you will make a difference, whether that be through employment, sustainability, net zero, that type of thing. But as I said, Nathan, this is his expertise, and I'm sure he'll add a few more points.
So tendering is constantly evolving. There's always new elements being introduced into a tender, as you said, you know, from a health and safety perspective relating to infection prevention and control. You know, even GDPR has been introduced May 2018, and those questions are still creeping in, but they're expanding upon those points and looking at things like cyber essentials or ISO 27001, because, you know, where data's going missing on being left on trains and confidential information just being scattered around, left in the pub and whatnot. You know, people need to, commissioners want to trust in the people they're purchasing their services from. So it's all more important that we get these certifications and encourage clients to get them, whether it's for a tender that we're working on at the minute or it's going to be a tender that's 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line. You know, also with future of tendering, we also want to look at innovation. We want to be constantly improving, and again, that comes down to the systems and processes that people use, getting those certifications, getting those accreditations, and also digitizing workflows to enhance the security of all the data that's changing hands between, you know, our clients and ourselves, and commissioners and the client once they start delivering services. And as James said, social value is massively important. We want to be seen to be doing things in the community that buyers want to have their pound go a lot further in the local community. So whether that's employment of local people, whether that's investing in training programs, or whether that's people doing their bit for the community. And again, the pandemic, fantastic example of that, where people were going out, you know, helping out with transport, donating PPE, having their premises being used for sort of vaccination centers and things like that. So all of those really positive things that we want to try and celebrate. And again, improving systems and processes. A pandemic was a fictitious event that could possibly happen, and then it happened to us, and then it caused everyone to batten down the hatches for 4 years. So having your business continuity plan in place, having all of your policies and procedures that go along with that, your remote working opportunities for remote working, so staff and businesses can continue to get to work, continue to operate, and that's where the digitization comes in with sort of cloud-based systems, and having your cyber security up to standard as well.
Fantastic, thank you. Yeah, definitely really interesting, and No doubt, I'm sure there's lots more opportunities on the horizon. I mean, interestingly, and I don't want to digress too much in terms of like the political landscape and the do you ever see any impact with election cycles and things in terms of tendering and in terms of maybe more tenders being up for grabs or any kind of changes in terms of the types of tenders? Like, is there anything, you know, thinking ahead to the next few months, what kind of opportunities might that present to small businesses?
Yeah, so we're currently in a state of purdah. So obviously we're between governments. We've got an election coming up in a few weeks, so that can massively influence procurement decisions, especially obviously from central government, and also from a budgetary point of view. If we know we're going to have a change of government, we're going to have different policies in place, different manifestos and whatnot. So when it comes to local authorities, they generally have got their budget in place for the next, for the foreseeable. So that doesn't tend to impact local decisions, but certainly at central government we can sort of see tenders being pulled, and we have seen tenders being pulled very, very recently. But it also changes the way commissioning takes place. So commissioners, the evaluators, will look for different things in the tender, especially where there are budgetary constraints at a local or national level.
And are there any particular periods of the year or times of the year where you would see a higher volume of tenders being up for grabs?
I think between financial periods, so when we get sort of like you either have local authorities with a few pounds left over to spend, so they'll quickly put a tender together and put it out just to make sure that they can they've got those funds allocated for a project, and certainly once the budget gets announced, we get a few more tenders released then, because people know how much money they've got to work with. I think we see that, but then during the pandemic we continue to operate through that period, and we saw different types of opportunities being released just because the nature of what's going on with the pandemic, with the PPE supplies or any other services that commissioners instantly needed, that they couldn't wait to go through the whole tendering process, which can take 3, 6, 9, 12 months, and they just wanted to procure things as quickly as possible.
And in terms of like best practice strategies, obviously touching quite a lot already, but if we've got clients and potentially businesses that are listening that are thinking, they're not kind of brand new to tendering, they've done some tendering in the past, maybe had some success, how do we take that next step in terms of improving the success and making that journey that you touched on earlier in terms of going for bigger contracts and winning bigger tenders? What's your advice from going from winning your first tender to then looking into the future?
Yeah. Again, it comes back to being realistic. Realistic for companies to take a step back and make sure they're actually bidding for the right opportunities. We've found working with companies that actually do have an internal bid team and they want us to sense check, or they want us to take on a couple of tenders that they're at capacity. We step in and write a few. What we've found is some of these have a scattergun approach, which doesn't work because they end up having to bid for multiple tenders just to keep people busy, and also some smaller companies that just want it to win something, so they have a scattergun approach, and it just doesn't work because you spend your time, you then become a full-time bid writer in addition to trying to run the business, or you have your day job. So you've got to be selective. The scattergun approach doesn't work. These things will help increase your chances of winning if you're bidding for the right contracts that stack up for yourselves. And just remembering that you don't have to keep bidding for tenders all day, every day. So long as you bid for the right one that suits your business, that's the main one. And that's why what we can bring in our expertise is stepping in, writing their bid for them and making sure that they're actually bidding for the right tender in the first place. So that will massively increase your chances of winning because you're going for the right tenders. And just by investing in yourself, as we've touched on with the accreditation side of things, we've worked with a couple of companies in the past that are an incumbent for a contract. The new tender is re-tendered, and there's some nasty surprises in there about some accreditations they don't have. And then all of a sudden, you've got a time pressure then, because you've got 4 weeks to respond to the tender. You've got to try and get accredited in that sort of time, or commit to being accredited in that time. And that's what appealed to us with a partnership with Citation all those years back, because you can step in and get guys, companies accredited quickly. I think you quote about 45 days for the turnaround, which works well with a tender. So if they are successful, they will have that in place. But essentially, bidding for the right contracts, drop the scattergun approach and outsource your tender writing to someone like ourselves, and that will give them the best chances of success from a commercial and a client point of view, there's obviously some very specific ones you have to do when you are writing the bid, which Nathan will touch on now.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you have to trust in the professionals. It's the same for yourselves with compliance, with HR, with health and safety accreditations and whatnot. Sometimes you do have to leave it to the experts. If you're only engaging in tenders 2, 3, 4 times a year max, we're doing it day in, day out, all year round. So we know what we need. We know what needs to be done, and we know how much effort needs to be put into a tender. And as James said, we're working with people, small businesses especially, where they do have their day job to contend with. So we want to minimize their input, make sure that they can just attend a few client calls, gather the supporting documents we need for the tender, and then leave it to us to produce the very best response that we can. And because of everything that we're doing at the front end, we're making sure that client is eligible and there's a chance of success. And also it is a team effort. We'll do a referral to yourselves and you'll do a referral to us to make sure that we've got those compliance elements in check, that we can put turnarounds. I know you guys have turned around Cyber Essentials certifications for some of our clients within like 10 days or something like that. So we've made sure that the client has that chance of success. But also we need to learn from our mistakes. We're not going to win it every single time. As James said at the top of the podcast, we've got a 93% success rate, so in some instances we will lose, but we want to find out why we lost, how we can improve. And again, as James said, you get clients who are trying to retain their contracts, and they're trying to put in the same tender that they did 4 or 5 years ago. And coming back to your point on innovation and the future of tendering, we need to constantly improve. We always need to identify our shortfalls. We always need to see where we can do better. We do want to do better every single time. So we review, we revise, and we repeat, and we keep getting better.
Thank you. I think there's been loads of great advice there for businesses, and no doubt lots of food for thought and things that businesses can look to put into practice. So, in terms of your number one tip and your number one takeaway from today, for people that are listening, what's your number one tip when it comes to increasing the success and the chance of winning more tenders?
I'd say two, really. Sounding like a broken record, but be realistic with yourself. Take a step back and engage the professionals, whether that be from a tender writing point of view, accreditation point of view. And as long as you've got those, that experience that we can add to that bid, and being realistic about going for the right opportunities for you, that is going to provide a good foundation to build, your bid upon. And as we've proven, time and time again, it's a snowball effect. Once you start winning the right ones for you that you can deliver on successfully, and day in, day out, when you win that tender and you're delivering on that contract, it's a success. That commissioner is happy with you. That then provides a case study, that provides a reference. And once you start winning some more and more tenders, all of a sudden you've got 5, 6 different public sector references that you can call on for your next tenders. So be realistic and engage the professionals.
I would say I've got two as well. I would say thoroughly understand the requirements. Make sure you know what you're getting involved with, and we'll help with that at the front end through the go no go decisions. And then another one is showcase your value proposition. So highlight your strengths, what makes you different, what's going to set you apart from the competition. Because yes, we want to be compliant. Yes, we want to check off all of the criteria that the commissioner has outlined. But we also want to sell you as a business. And that's not to say that tender documents are marketing documents, because there's a whole different ball game when it comes to marketing versus tenders. But we want to make sure that we really showcase who you are, and why you're the best person for the job.
Thank you. And I'm right in thinking as well, out of that, we kind of practice what we're preaching, that yourself, if you use our services, don't you, for your sort of cleaning business. And equally, we've within the group recently used your services for some of our tenders. So I don't know if you want to share a bit about your experience of but on both sides.
Yeah, from the point of view of citation, you guys offer a number of different services. You're training your HR, health and safety, employment law. A lot of this needs evidence in a tender. So there's whether that be policies or training matrices, or the support that you've got, tenders will actually explicitly ask who your external consultant is. So there'll be a scenario where you do have to list citation, and with the branding and the industry perception that you guys have got, it adds to your bid. often they ask for like a biography of who is their consultant, their external consultant. We submit that with the tender as well. So it's having that brand, that trusted brand behind your bid, that, you know, the evaluators are going to look at and say, look, they're definitely getting compliant support from a health and safety HR point of view. And throughout the citation group, each of these areas, you know, tenders touch those sort of areas, especially the likes of Tupi. And having that expert knowledge on these types of areas will prove invaluable for bidders, essentially. From our point of view, why you'd outsource, you know, I'm a big believer in outsourcing, obviously, because why would you do it yourself when it's such hard work? When it's such hard work and we offer such support, such experience, and a win rate that we've got, I don't know why you do it in-house. You know, it's a in-depth process, and from, you know, clients often describe it as an absolute nightmare process for 4 weeks of trying to win this tender. But to keep it in your hands and your team's hands that aren't tendering experts, give yourselves the best possible chance of success and use your tender team for bid writing. And it's exactly the same as, you know, as using a citation. If you're not a HR, health and safety, employment law specialist, why do it yourself? Get the experts in, and it can only add weight to your bid.
Agree. Why would you do it yourself? You know, try and tackle something that you've never done before. You're just going to give it a go, but yet you've got an all important contract on the line. So I think it's really important that you do outsource to experts such as yourselves or to us at your tender team. You know, we do this day in, day out, the same as you when it comes to matters of compliance, when it comes to matters of tendering. And you know, we can look at things from an objective point of view, not just, you know, how the client thinks that or why the client thinks they're good enough to bid for something. We're objective. We can say, we can identify your strengths. We can identify, should this be included in the tender or not? And sometimes we do have to have that tough conversation because something that the client might think is great is just sort of standard average. So we want to try and identify what the weaknesses are and what the key selling points are for the tender. And again, you know, we have a fantastic track record just as yourselves. We're both multi-award winning businesses, you know, and we should be celebrated for that.
I might think about it, James, yourself and the team, like you work across the whole citation group. So you work with our colleagues across Citation Cyber, Citation ISO, SMAS. You also, you know, work with one of our sister companies, HS2X. You work with a number of different businesses and products that you work across the citation group. And do you find it useful to have, I suppose, like, you know, one point of contact, or, you know, have, you know, a bit of a one-stop shop in terms of, you know, when you're wanting to signpost to clients, the fact that you've got, you know, within the group, a range of products and solutions.
Yeah, it goes to show how much he's actually involved in tendering, because, you know, all of those different companies within the citation group, their services can be mentioned and referred to and directly asked questions to within a single tender. So having that one-stop shop approach is invaluable for us, really. And yeah, like I say, you know, one question would be very much health and safety, the next about compliance, the next about accreditation. So having that one company to provide all these different services is great for us as a partner, but also our client, because they'll have one-stop shop on their system, on their, you know, log into their account, have this access to all these documentations at their fingertips, ready to submit with a tender. Yeah, so within the HS Direct, part of it is, you know, it's such a time saver just by having compliant RAMs within the business, really. And yet again, RAMs, it's often a requested submission, a submission request for RAMs within a tender. So you've got to submit a sample RAMs for a contract, and that's invaluable to have a generic RAMs that changes every time legislation changes, every time the law changes. And then the ability to actually modify it and make it bespoke to that particular contract. And yeah, like you say, we worked closely with Citation and a company within the Citation group, and have won a number of tenders for them, 100% win rate for them. So it's good that you guys trust us with your tenders. And yeah, the relationship's growing. The clients are happy. We see clients, you know, feedback from our clients to see how they're finding Citation. It's always very positive. They're always offering the right amount of information for tenders at the end of the phone, and to log in just to have those documents there ready, especially when we're up against it time-wise on a tender. So yeah, it's going very well.
Cool, thank you. Well, obviously, big thank you to James and Nathan, you know, for all their insights today. So, you know, if you would like to find out anything more about your tender team and our partnership, you know, we'll have the relevant links in the description of this podcast. And I'm sure, you know, James and Nathan are more than happy to answer any specific questions that you guys have got about tenders or any opportunities for you guys to collaborate. So, yeah, so a big, big thank you. No doubt we'll see James and Nathan on future webinars and future podcasts. And yeah, if you've got any questions, you know, please do get in touch.